My name is Mike Pearson. I grew up in a small town in southern Minnesota, not in Hanska, where Sister's from, but down in that area, St. Peter. And if you've never heard of St. Peter, anybody heard of St. Peter? If you're raising your hand, there's probably one of three things. You say, yeah, St. Peter, that's where Gustavus College is. Or, yeah, that's that cute little town we go through on the way to Mankato. Or the other thing you say is, didn't they have a big tornado down there in about 7 or 8 years ago? And that's a lot of the ways people identify with St. Peter. But I grew up in St. Peter, Minnesota. And I've been married now. I live in Lakeville now. And I've been married for 21 years to my lovely wife, Dee Dee, over there by the light post. And, yeah, 21 years is, you should clap for her. Let me tell you, 21 years, and we have three children, and one of them's here today, the one who got up the earliest. We didn't know how this would all shake out, and so we have a 12-year-old, we have a 9-year-old, and the 5-year-old, and Griffin's here. Hi, Griffin. Hi, Griffin. So that's my family. We live in Lakeville, Minnesota. I'm part of a ministry called His Clay Ministries, and really what I do is try and reach out and touch the hearts and lives of people through inspiring them and encouraging them to be all in for Jesus Christ. And we say all in, if you know anything about cards, playing cards. Anybody familiar with Texas Hold'em? You're like, this guy's talking about gambling. We're at a church service. What is the deal here? Texas Hold'em, you ever heard of that? Where they have chips and they slide them into the middle of the table, and what do they say? They say, we'll pray for you guys. There's some gambling problems in here somewhere, I think. They slide the chips in the middle of the table and they say, I'm all in. And God gave me something in my heart that said, you know what? I want my people to be like that. I want them to grab the finances, you know, and I want them to grab the marriage, and I want them to grab the career and the life issues, and I want them just to take it all and slide it right into the middle of the table of life. And God wants us to say, you know what, Lord? I'm all in for you. I'm going to give it all to you. I'm not going to keep or hang on to any of them. I'm going to give it all to you. All in. And so that's what I really do, is I go around and inspire, encourage people. That's what God has in my heart, is to inspire and encourage people to be all in. To be all in. And so really what I want to talk to you about this morning is what is God up to? What is God? How has God gotten me here today in terms of this all-in mission, and what is this all about? And I would start by saying this. I've been married 21 years. 9 years ago, I was living in an apartment in Burnsville. And you're like, but you said you live in Lakeville. I was living in an apartment in Burnsville. My family was in our house in Lakeville. And my wife and I were a couple days away from an ink stroke to a divorce. We were going to end it all, and it was going to be all over, and we were going to go our separate ways. Nothing was working. We had been married about 11 years up to that point, if I'm doing the math right. And so nothing was working in our marriage. Nothing was working in our life. And I sat in the apartment one day, and I sat and I said, you know, I'm a good kid. I grew up in St. Peter, like the all-American boy. They called me Richie Cunningham in high school. You got the guy, you know, the sweater vest and the Letterman's coat. Kind of nerdy for some people, but that's the way I grew up in St. Peter, Minnesota. My parents were farm kids. My uncles, they all were farmers. I was just a good old boy. I wanted to be like the Fonz, but they called me Richie Cunningham. You know, and so that's the kind of life I grew up in. I played Division I sports. I played college baseball at the University of Minnesota. And I played 4 years for the Gophers and played baseball there. Had success, great success in the athletic realm. Got done with college sports, and then I moved on and I built a career. And I got a great house, and I got a nice W-2, and I had a great job title, and I had a nice place to work every day. And I really had life where I thought, this is the American dream. I'm living it. So I sat in the apartment that day, and I said, how come I have everything, and I'm sitting here absolutely empty with nothing? Why is it that my life seems like I have everything I want, and I'm sitting here, and I feel like I have nothing at all? I'm going to lose everything I have. And I was wildly confused that day. I sat in that apartment in Burnsville, broken, uncertain, confused, didn't know what was happening in my life. And a couple days there from there, I was going to lose my children, my house, my wife, everything. And I thought, you know what? How did I get here? How did I get here? I feel like I've done everything right, and I've tried so hard. There's got to be something more. I went to work that day, and I talked to one of my buddies, and he was a Christian, and I sat in my office with my tears streaming down my face. I said, you know what? I've tried to do the best I can in life. I've tried to do everything right. And I'm sitting here today, and in 2 days I'm going to be going to a court and signing papers. I'm going to lose everything. I don't get it. I've tried and tried and tried, and he stopped me, and he said, Michael, here's the deal. You have tried so hard to do it all on your own. He goes, but Michael, I've invited you to the men's event. I've invited you to the retreats. I've invited you. He goes, the one thing that you're missing in life, and what I've been trying to tell you for the last 6 years, is you're missing God. You're missing God in your life. It's the void. That's the emptiness that you have in your life. It's the striving that you have going on. You're missing God. And I sat there and said, but I don't understand. I grew up in the church. I was an altar boy. I was Richie Cunningham. I was an altar boy. I did all the sacraments and whatnot. I grew up religious, and I knew who God was. And I said, I went to church every week, and I never missed it. I said, why am I still empty? He goes, this is it. You grew up on religion, and it's about relationship. He goes, you're missing the relationship piece. I go, what does that mean? Relationship. He goes, you need to ask Christ into your life. He needs to be at the center. You need to be all in. You need to give it all to God. Jesus needs to be your Lord and Savior. No idea what he was talking about. No idea what he was talking about. But something happened in my office that day at work, and I can't explain it. But he walked out. We sat there and we prayed together, and I accepted Jesus Christ into my life, not knowing at all what was happening or what I was doing. But I had gotten to a point in my life where I had tried everything else, and I said, you know what? If I have one last hope in life, then it's going to be God. And it's going to be this relationship with Jesus Christ. So we prayed that day. And he walked out of my office, and I sat there wiping the tears away, not knowing what I was going to do next. And the Lord was there. He was. Because I picked up the phone in my office, and I called my wife in Lakeville at our house, and I said, would you get together with me and meet with me? She said, absolutely not. Your cycles, the way you act, the way you behave, way that I've had, the things that I've had to deal with, because up until that point it had been about me. I gotta build a career, I gotta get a nice house, I have to build a big house, I have to have the W-2, I need the job title, I need the car, I need people to accept me, I need the approval. It was me. She said, Mike, I've had enough. I said, would you please just meet with me? She agreed to meet. We met down at Buffalo Wild Wings down in Apple Valley. It was about 8 or 9 years ago. We sat in Buffalo Wild Wings, and she sat across from me. Really, neither one of us knew what to say. Stormy relationship to that point. She probably didn't want to look at me, let alone talk to me. There was nothing going on in our relationship other than we just didn't get along. We were angry, we were bitter, we were resentful toward each other, and I sat there and I said, here's the deal. I know we're about 2 days away from ending it all, and I said, but I want to ask you something here, and I got to tell you something that just happened to me about 2 hours ago. And I sat across the table from her and looked at her and looked her in the eyes. My wife went to church, and she grew up kind of knowing who God was. She went to church like I did every weekend, but new religion, not relationship. And here I am sitting across the table from her, and I said, I want you to give me another chance. And it's not about me, but it's about God. She got this look in her head like, God, now you're going to play the God card. It's the only one he hasn't played yet. And I said, no, hear me out. I said, I've given my life to Christ. I've made Jesus my Lord and Savior. Even more puzzled, she kind of looked at me across the table. I said, I have no idea what it means. I don't. I said, but if there's any chance, if there's any hope for our marriage, this is it. And I said, will you give me another chance? And she said, I don't think I can. And I sat there and looked at her and looked her in the eye, and I said, if you can't give me a chance, would you please give God a chance in this? Because it's not about me anymore. And she said, Mike, I want to believe that. She goes, you know, I don't know God or this Jesus or this relationship thing, but you know what? I'm going to trust God on this one. You know what? I am going to give God a chance. It goes against everything I say. My family's going to call me crazy. My friends are going to call me nuts. But I'm going to go for it, and I'm going to let God do his work in our life. Neither one of us knew where we were heading. I moved my stuff out of Burnsville back into Lakeville. We put everything on hold, the papers on hold. I moved back into the house. We started joining a local church that taught Alpha. And we went to Alpha course, and we learned about who Jesus is, and we learned about forgiveness, and we learned about grace, and we learned about mercy, and we learned about worrying about the log in your own eye before worrying about the speck in the other person's eye. We learned a lot of things that the gospel message taught us that we did not know. And things started to change. We were broken. We were torn up. I said to my wife at one point in the process, I said, we are so battered that there is nothing that could make this marriage better. No way could we get back to where we were. We were both convinced of that. Here it is 3 months later, and we're looking at each other going, what is happening in our life? Neither one of us could explain it. Something was helping with the Alpha course. Something was happening when we were going to church. God was moving in our lives. We couldn't explain it. We didn't understand it. 4 months had passed, and we went out to the Chart House in Lakeville. And we sat down and had a dinner to celebrate my wife's birthday. And I'm not going to tell you which one, because I always promised her when I speak up here, I'll never say how old you are or what birthday it is. We sat in Chart House, and we had a nice dinner. And we had a discussion like we had not had for years. And we talked about kids, and we talked about life, and we talked about dreams. And I can't explain it, but God was there that night, sitting at that table with us. In fact, we walked out of that restaurant that night. We walked out into the parking lot, and we got to our vehicle, and we stood there. And my wife looked me in the eyes, and she goes, "I don't know what's happened to my husband in the last 3 months, 4 months. I can't explain it. It makes no sense to me. You are not the same person that I knew 5 or 6 months ago." And she stood next to her car and she said, "I'm not sure what it is." She goes, "But I want whatever it is you can. I want whatever God." Never hit the microphone when you're talking to people. "I want whatever it is you got." And we stood next to the vehicle in the parking lot. She goes, "What do we do next?" I said, "I don't know. I think there's a formula, there's some password or something that you have to say and you accept Christ in your life." And I said, "No." We sat in my office that day, and I know that I sat there and my buddy prayed for me, and all he said was to encourage me to invite Jesus into my heart. And we stood next to our car that night in the Chart House parking lot 4 months after I accepted Christ into my life, and my wife accepted Jesus Christ into her heart that night. And together we prayed that prayer of salvation for her. And our lives since then have been radically, radically changed. I can't explain to you, when you put Jesus Christ in the center and you make Him all in, how radical your life can change and how things in your life can change. Things that you can't explain. Things that are bigger than you. Things that you could never do on your own. And our life was radically changed as a result of Jesus Christ coming in and being at the center of our lives. Today our marriage is stronger than it's ever been. We have a love that's so profound I can't explain it. It goes beyond the puppy love the first day I met her at the University of Minnesota. It goes beyond our wedding day. It goes beyond the night I proposed to her. The love is so deep with Christ at the center of our marriage that I can't explain it to you. And today we sit here serving Him and sharing His testimony in terms of what He's done in our life and how He has radically changed our marriage. Something that was completely destroyed and broken. And He brought it up and made it new. And I want to share with you a couple things of what I learned in this journey and how it might speak to you a little bit and where I was and then where God took me. Because the way the world had me believing is that my value came from how I performed and what others thought about me. See, the world wants you to believe that V equals P plus O. Your value in life comes from your performance and what others think of you. And so I grew up in sports, proving myself every day that I was an athlete and I was a jock and that I was Richie Cunningham and I was going to do everything right. And I grew up in life saying, you know what, I'm always going to do the right thing because I want people to love me. I want to be accepted. And the world wants you to do that. And that's why we pretty up our hair and we wear certain outfits and we like to dress certain ways, because we want people to like us and we want people to accept us. And so the world says the formula to life is V equals P plus O. Your value equals what people think of you, or no, your performance plus what other people think of you. And I grew up believing that. And I grew up living that lie. And so you hear it all the time. You go to a graduation party, go make us proud. Hey, you're a Pearson. Go out and you know, conquer the world. You can do it. Go live out your dreams. Everything points to us. And so early on in life, we get this monkey on our back. And it's up to us. And it doesn't get easier, because then we get married, right? You get married. And then you get into the marriage, and there's no instructions on that, because I was looking for the manual in the middle of our trial, saying, where is it where she comes to me and says this and I say that? When I come home from a long day of work, where does it say in there that she's supposed to rub my feet? I can't find that in the book anywhere. Where's that part? And where's the book that says when I come home and she's physically exhausted from chasing two kids around the house all day, where is it in the manual that says that she needs a break and I need to grab the kids and help her and maybe make dinner? Where is it in that manual? Because I have not found that manual. I look for it. I also look for the manual on kids. You know, we put teenagers through trials and trials and trials of driving a car so that they can earn this little card that entitles them to drive a car around the streets. But you can have a baby at any age and you can go ahead and raise the baby, and there's no requirements on that. I don't understand that. And so I'm sitting in a delivery room, and I got this brand new Bambino, our first child, and I'm looking at going, wow, this is incredible. And then the nurses are there, and they help you and everything. And then you drive home, and you get home, and you go, whoa, now what? Where's the button you can push where someone's going to run in and tell you what to do? You know, and then you're in the middle of the night, it's 3 a.m, and the baby's screaming and crying and hollering, and you're looking at each other, and you're both worn out and dead, and we're going to go to work in the morning, and you're holding it up looking for the off switch. Because you don't know what to do. And you're looking for that manual. And so early on in life and even in life, we are led to believe that it's all up to you to do it and to figure it out. And then you stop and think for a while. Without a roadmap for life, what does that mean? Look around our world just for a second and see what it looks like when we don't have a roadmap for life. Where does anxiety come from? Anxiety comes from the fact that we have so much pressure on each one of ourselves to perform that we don't know what to do with it. There's so much pressure in life to be the man, so to speak, for guys, and to be the all-American woman, the all-American wife, to be, you know, kind of perfect in the world's eyes. Anxiety drives that. The monkey on our back is heavier and heavier the more we get into life and the more we get marriages and jobs and careers and families. And it's like, I can barely withstand it. And then you wonder where depression comes from. Depression comes from the fact that you get worn out from the anxiety. You're just, the monkey gets so heavy that you want to sit down and just say, you know what? This is all I can bear. It's all I can stand. And then brokenness is the combination of where depression and anxiety are so much that you just sit there and you don't know what to do. You want to throw your hands up and say, I'm completely lost. I was there. I was in there in my apartment that day. Going, what in the world? How did I get here? I was full of anxiety. I was full of depression. I was broken. I didn't even know who I was anymore. I felt like a load. I was losing my marriage. I was failing in life. And then you wonder where addictions come from. People say, I can't do it anymore. I need to escape. Beer, alcohol, pornography. Pick your poison. It comes as a result of the world, just the monkey getting so heavy that you can barely stand it. You can barely stand it. If you're living the world the way the world wants you to live, your talk inside your head is like this. If I could only get a better job, life would be so much easier. If I could only get out of this debt hole that I'm in, life would be so much easier. If I only owned a boat as big as my neighbor's boat, then life would be so much easier. If I could only, if I, and we stop and we say, who is the power source? Us. We carry this monkey on our back that says, we have to do it. If I, and what we're all after is, hey, I knew at some point, if I had the biggest house, the biggest boat, the nicest job, the best W-2, the best job title, that I would arrive. You know what? Have you ever thought about that in life? There would come that point in time when I was 42 years old, and I'd sit in that lounge chair, and I'd sit down and go, woo, I'm here. And this peace would come over me. And I'd sit there, and I would be the Mac Daddy. And I would be like, yeah. And it feels so good because the monkey just fell off my back, and I'm here. And it never happened. It never happened. But that's what I wanted. And I don't know why. Because all you have to do is stop and look around, right? Look around for a second. We're after money. Let's look at Hollywood. How's Hollywood doing with all the money and all the dough? How are the professional athletes doing with all the money and the dough? Is money the answer? Do you see dysfunction anywhere in Hollywood? In professional sports? Well, then power must be it. If I had power, that would be it. Well, certainly the politicians aren't living the high life. Right? I mean, power certainly can't be the answer. Man, if I could just win the lottery, that would be it. I could arrive and I would be there. The lottery's the ticket. Do you know that 4 out of 5 people who win the lottery end up bankrupt? And those same 4 out of 5 will tell you, I wish I never won that lottery in the first place. Saw it on a documentary on TV. Unbelievable. But that's what we sit and continue to pursue every day. We do. We continue to pursue it every day. Me, 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 me. I. We call it transitional living. We move from one thing to the next trying to get our fix in life so that we can get that little high, so that we can feel good about ourselves, that the monkey kind of gets a little lighter. That the monkey gets a little lighter. Let me give you an analogy of how the way life works here, the way life looks to us. My wife and I, before we had kids, we call that BC. Before we had children, we used to go to the dog track in Hudson, Wisconsin. It's grassed over now. They're not running out there anymore, which is kind of a bummer. We love dogs, and we just like to go watch them run, and we go pet them afterwards, and they had dog adoption. So we go out to the Greyhound track in Hudson, Wisconsin. Have you ever been there? Anybody ever gone there? Okay. We used to go out there and watch the dogs run, and they'd go around. And you ever see the dog track? What do they chase? What do they chase? It's a rabbit. It's not real, is it? Animal rights people wouldn't be happy. They're probably not happy that it's a mechanical one, but it's a mechanical rabbit, right? And it goes around the track, right? And then the dogs chase it, right? And they call this thing a lure. That's what they call it. They call it a lure. And it goes around the track, right? And then it comes around the end and then stops, and then where does it go? Anybody know? It disappears. So the dogs chase this rabbit, and they go around the track, and then the rabbit disappears, and then it stops, right? And then the handlers come out and they grab the dogs, and then they bring some new dogs out and they do it all over again. My wife and I were watching this. Every time that rabbit comes around right in front of the starting gate, the announcer would do this. He'd go, "The lure's in motion." And that's what he would say out at St. Croix Meadows. "The lure's in motion." And then it would come by, and then the gate would come up, and then the dogs would chase this fake rabbit, and they'd go all the way around the track, and they'd come past the finish line, and then the dogs would go, and it would disappear, and then they'd stop, and they'd bark, 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 and the handlers would come out, and then they'd bring out dogs again. And we went out to the track 4 or 5 times, and we laughed. We said, "I don't get it. The dogs, it's not real. They're chasing a fake rabbit, but they chase it anyway. And then they chase it, and it disappears. They never catch the thing, but they still come out every day, and they chase it, and they chase it, and they chase it. And every day, that guy goes, "The lure's in motion, the lure's in motion." I'd lay in bed at night and hear that. And it was funny. We went one day, and my wife said this, "It's like life." She goes, "The dog track is just like life." I said, "I don't understand. What do you mean?" She goes, "Listen, it's 6 o'clock in the morning. The alarm's going off. Boom, I hit the handle. The lure's in motion." Right? I get up, I run into the shower, 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 woo, woo, get clothes on, gotta go fire. Remember, I have no caffeine or Red Bull in me. I go in and get to the shower, go, go, go. I go hustling out, see my wife, I high-five her, I grab some eggs while I'm flying out the door. I get in the car, I go in traffic, I go down the road as fast as I can go to get to work. People cut me off, I'm not happy, they're not happy. Not making friends on the way to work. Get to work, 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 come home, eat, high-five the kids, do a little homework, put them in bed, lay down, go to sleep. 6 a.m., boom, the lure's in motion. And you gotta believe there's somebody out there watching, perhaps God, sitting there going, "These dogs, these people are kind of curious. They're chasing this lure, but they never catch it. But every day they get up and chase it." And we sat there and looked at these dogs and we said, "We're just like the dogs. We get up and we chase. I chased this lure my whole life until I found myself in an apartment in Burnsville saying, 'I am tired and worn out and beat down and I cannot catch this lure.' And gave my life to God." That day when I sat in my office, my buddy said this, "You need to move from transitional living and you need to move to transformation living. You need to stop trying to be the power source in life. You need to let God be the power source in life, because God is the power source. God says in His Word in the Bible, it says, 'For I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans for good, not for harm, plans for hope and a future.'" I said, "Really?" He goes, "The Lord has great plans for your life. Trust Him with all your heart and your soul. Lean on His will, and He will guide your path." And when He told me these things, and I stopped thinking that I had to do it, that I had to go make a name for myself, that I had to make it up. When He told me these things in my office that day, the monkey started to slide right off my back. I said, "You mean I don't have to do this on my own?" And he said, "No." And he goes, "Guess what? There will be challenges in your life. You will have struggles. You and your wife will not get along in your relationship, even though that God's at the center. But guess what? You will have someone to turn to, because He will give you grace. And He will give you mercy. And He will speak to you and say, 'I love you just the way you are. I made you just as you are. I know the hairs on your head. I knew you before you were here.'" And I went, "Wow, that feels good. That I can go to my wife and say, 'You know what, honey, I want to extend to you the same grace and mercy that God's given me, because I've been a train wreck my whole life. I've tried to do it all right, but I've never been a good husband.'" And to understand that while there will be challenges in life, that anxiety and depression and brokenness and addiction can all go away when I let God and I accept His grace and I accept His mercy and I accept His hope and I accept His joy and I accept His peace. All of it can wash away. Because I don't have to rely on the world to give me what He's already done. So he says, transformational living in the office that day. And he says this, it's about your faith in Him that He will provide and sustain you. Not your faith in you that you can go do it. He told me 2 stories in the Bible and they went like this. The first one was a centurion soldier, a Roman soldier, came alongside Jesus after the masses had cleared, because the Romans were not friends with the Jews. They wanted to suppress them and hold them down. Nobody was a big fan of Jesus, but he was creating such a stir. And this centurion soldier, this Roman soldier, comes along Jesus when everybody's gone, and he says this to him. He says, "Lord," he goes, "my son is ill, and I was coming to you to see if you could heal him." Jesus was profoundly intrigued by the Roman coming to him. And he said to him, he goes, "I would be happy to heal your son." He goes, "Take me to him." And this is where it gets really powerful. The centurion soldier says to Jesus, he says, "No, Lord, just say the word and it will be done." He didn't say, "Yeah, come with me, Jesus." He said, "No, Lord, just say the word and it will be done." Jesus says this, he goes, nowhere in the land has there been greater faith than this. And my buddy in the office said that to me. He goes, your faith in God, Mike, your belief that He is the power source, your belief that He is at the center will trigger power in your life, transforming power beyond anything you could ever do or imagine. It's your faith that triggers God's power in your life. Because He said there was a woman that was bleeding and no doctor could cure her. Luke talks about it in the gospel. No one could cure her. And she came fighting. It was Passover. And she comes fighting through Jesus. People are everywhere in Passover. And she comes fighting through the crowds. And she's beating her way. She's kicking, clawing. People are like, lady, what are you doing? And she's finding any way she can to get to Jesus. And she reaches out through Him and just gets a hand on Him and touches Him. And she's healed immediately. And Jesus stops in the masses and He goes, who touched me? And His disciples are like, Jesus, there's people everywhere. We're banging all against them everywhere we go. What do you mean? Jesus said, no, somebody, I felt the healing power go out of me. Somebody in this crowd believes I am who I say I am. And He wants to meet this lady. He's profoundly moved. And He finds her and He goes, lady, and He says this, your faith has made you well. We're waiting for cures for stuff that the doctors can't figure out that God already has done. Cancer, leukemia, AIDS. God's, your faith has made you well. That doesn't mean that we're sitting here today and we're not praying hard enough for healing or recovery, that God doesn't want to help us or heal us. God just says, your faith. And my buddy in the office that day says, your faith will make your life something you won't recognize forever. And so when we let God be the power source and we lean on Him and we have faith in Him, not us, in the world, radical things happen in your marriages. Radical things happen in your families. Radical things happen in your workplaces. Radical change happens when Jesus Christ is at the center. I want to finish up by sharing a story with you about All In. There's this professor in college. He's noted as the toughest professor on campus. When I went to college, they were all tough. Every class was tough for me. But this guy was the toughest professor in college. 50% of the kids didn't pass his final exam. So the kids go into the final exam that day, and they're sitting in their seats, and they're petrified because they're looking around the room saying, half of us aren't going to pass this test. And so he administers the test and throws it out. And he goes, don't turn it over. He goes, I want to offer you something. He goes, this. He said, I will offer you an automatic C if you want to get up right now and leave the room. Whoa. A C? A guaranteed pass if I can just get up and go out of this room. Yep, a C. Well, there's a little buzz going on in the classroom. The kids are looking at me. Are you kidding me? Get a C? Before you know it, one by one, two by two, they're heading out the classroom. So there's three kids left in the room. The three that studied, right? There's three kids left in the room. And they're sitting there, and the professor says, well, very well. The C's are gone, and they're down the room. I wish you guys the best. I hope you studied well, and good luck on this exam. Turn the exam over, you got 45 minutes. They flip over the exam and it says, congratulations, you got an A. Congratulations, you got an A. What's my point? Too many times in life, we get thrown a curveball. Too many times in life, we get an issue thrown at us. It's a financial issue, it's a relational issue. Something comes gunning at us in life that we're not ready for. And it hits us right between the eyes. And you know what we do? We panic and we try and figure out, what am I going to do? What am I going to do to resolve my marriage with my wife? What am I going to do to resolve this unemployment situation? What am I going to do to resolve this debt that I'm in? What am I going to do to bring relational healing to me and my parents? And we get caught in transitional thinking. And we take the C. We take the C in life. We say, I'm done. That's the horn. I got 2 minutes and we're doing communion here. Who's in that car? Somebody let me know. Get that license plate. We take the seat. We settle for, hey, you know what? It is what it is. I'm just going to take it. God says, no! I got an A plan for your life. Stick it out. Stop leaning on yourself. Don't take the monkey on your back. Trust in me. I want all of you. Don't accept the C because I got an A plan for your life. And when you put me at the center and you have faith in me, radical things are going to happen. Do not get up and walk out. Stick it out because I got a great plan for your life. A great plan for your life. So I don't know why you're here today. Who knows why you came? Some of you came because it's an outdoor worship service. I've never done one in a parking lot. It's cool. It's the first time. Maybe you came because you wanted to be with someone. Maybe you're here because you're hurting. Maybe you're here because you're broken. Maybe you're here because you have nowhere else to go. Maybe you're here because you're relationally wiped out. Maybe you're here because the monkey is so heavy that you're looking for a miracle. I don't know why you're here, but I can say this. God wants to meet you right where you're at. He wants you to set it right down and give it to Him right now. Whatever it is. Whatever it is, He wants you to give it to Him right now. And just lay it down at the cross to make Him the center, to be all in for Him. To make Him the center, to move apart everything else. Because here's what they say in the poker community. Here's what they say in the card room. The call comes around the table and the dealer says this, the call on the table is to you. That's what they say. They go around the table and you got your hand there and you're looking at it, you got all your chips, and they go, the call on the table is to you. What will you do? Will you slide those chips in the middle and give it all to God? All of it? Or will you hang on to the finances and give Him everything else? God wants it all. So the call, my friends, this morning, the call on the table is to you. Whatever it is you got going on in life, wherever your battle is, wherever your struggle is, get it in the middle and give it to God. Get it in the middle, give it to God. The question this morning is, are you all in? Are you all in?